You're tuned to Current State on WKAR, the Capital Region's weekly radio magazine of all things Lansing area and across Michigan. I'm your host, Peter Wharf.
I'd be afraid to send a child of mine to the store.
We've got our priorities mixed up. We make too many automobiles, let people rot all around them.
You call us savages and beasts and mad dogs running the street burning and looting, but we're doing this not for the destruction of the world, but we're trying to prove one point. We want freedom and justice and equality. We want to be treated equal.
This weekend marks 50 years since 5 days of violence broke out in Detroit at the corner of 12th Street and Claremont Avenue. Dozens died, thousands were arrested, and the city was engulfed in flames, and it prompted discussions about race, class, and policing. WKAR News Director Reginald Hardwick joins us now with the perspective of someone in the neighborhood that day and how he views his community today.
Sunday morning marks 50 years since a police raid on an unlicensed club in Detroit led to unrest that lasted 5 days. When it was over, 43 people were dead and entire neighborhoods were burned to the ground. And the Motor City's trajectory was changed for the next half century. Joining me now is MSU Professor of Sociology, Dr. Carl Taylor, and he has thoroughly studied Detroit and other communities over the many decades, and welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
You are a Detroit native. Where were you on that day in 1967?
Well, I have a very good memory, period, but I remember that day forever. I was coming out of church at noon, and I grew up in that neighborhood, and you could see the smoke. I was on Davison, and so it was about a mile away. You could see the smoke at noon. It was a beautiful July day, and you could not only see the smoke, you could begin to feel the energy, the negative energy, and you knew something was happening that was very different. I was 17 years old.
And what were the next few days like?
They were surreal. They were a complete antithesis of what I had grown up and known. Unlike some Detroiters or young men, I certainly had a different, I would say, understanding of police. I was not afraid of the police. I had a very, I'd say, a great childhood and growing up, so suddenly to have my school complex, which is Central High School, is where the 101st Airborne had landed. That was their command post there. You had tanks, jeeps. It was a war. And that was totally like nothing I'd ever seen before. So you had jeeps going up and down the street, tanks. I'd never seen a tank live moving outside. I'd never seen one live. See it in the movies. And then there you had, you could tell the difference in the 101st Airborne, who had just returned from Vietnam, which was a different soldier. That was a combat, they had already been in combat, opposed to the National Guard, who were weekend guards at that time. I don't know if you would say that today. So then you had the local police, the Detroit police, then you had the Michigan State Police, and of course you saw an assortment of other law enforcement agencies. So you're seeing all this, and we were, a curfew went into play, and you heard gunshots at night, which was, all of this was just surreal. This is totally different from anything I had ever experienced, ever.
You were 17 years old at the time. How did that change your outlook, or did it change your outlook going forward?
Absolutely. At many different levels. I was not racially sensitive. I didn't know, and some people perhaps would laugh, but we actually had a very diverse community. I remember I had a very good friend named Victor Lim, who's came from a very affluent family. He was related to a restauranter who had a very, one of the best, if not the best, Chinese restaurants downtown Detroit. Victor was my friend from elementary school. I had another young man by the name of Lyle Smith who was white, lived behind me. There was, our next door neighbor was a couple with no children, German. Catholic, the Gosses. Mr. Goss was the last of the hands crafting, making artificial limbs. Their child was a parakeet named Timmy. So she had a humongous garden. Her and my mother exchanged. And so it sounds like I'm kind of describing almost a utopia. It wasn't a utopia, but it certainly was not filled with violence. It's nothing like the stereotype of urban hellhole that represents many times, unfortunately, Detroit neighborhoods today. So it was a pivotal day in my life. I was preparing to come here as a freshman. And so July, and back then school didn't start until the end of, almost the end of September. And back then schools were not in motion until after Labor Day. So when you ask that question, you know, our stores were burned out, our neighborhoods were gutted. It was a very, just surreal destruction that it was just unreal. Like, what happened? We were working class folks. Again, despite the stereotypes of everybody's on welfare, we weren't that.
Some people say riot. Some people say uprising, rebellion, mm-hmm. disturbance. What do you say, and what's the difference in terms to you?
Well, a riot is totally out of control, and it's more of a reaction. It could be, and then that's what it was, pent-up reactions by some. I think some people were rioting. I think the unfortunate part that America did not realize that there were many solid citizens, working-class folks, like my folks. I remember coming home from church. We had church, you know, had church clothes, and got out of my church clothes, and I wanted to go up on 12th Street because the street was just abuzz with people in shopping carts, and they would, you know, had TVs, and they were breaking in pawn shops. They were breaking in all the stores. So foolishly, and I say foolishly because I should have knew better, I'm getting ready to hop off the porch, and my mother said, "Where are you going?" So I'm going up on 12th Street. You know, look what everybody was, a free fall. So it was rebellious also that some people were actually angry. I think I say as a researcher, but even then I could understand that this is strange. Who are these people and why are they doing this? And it really was the social levies visually. They burst. And when I say that, we segregate the poor. We segregate by race. It was a class issue. It was economics. But it also was social. There were families like my families, many of them, who absolutely refused to participate. They had no reason, but they were stakeholders. And I think that's what people didn't understand. It was those who were not stakeholders, and I'm not giving them an excuse, but it made sense. It also made sense that I better, my brothers and I, we better sit down on that porch because we were raised that you can get whatever you want. You have to work for it legally. And then there were those who, as a researcher, I could go back and I was amazed to find the anger, the rage that many had, the resentment towards a society that had forgotten them. And that is very true. So I say take your pick in labeling what it was, but it wasn't good. I can tell you that.
When was the last time you visited the neighborhood you grew up in, and what do you think of it now?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a tough question. I always keep a second resident in Detroit as a researcher. And I had taken my graduate classes to my own neighborhood. It's a very, probably, I would have to tell you, one of the most powerful and excruciating experiences to go back to my own neighborhood, which is abandoned. That was 50 years ago's immaculate lawns. And I can say that because my brother and I, in particular me, I'd cut half of the lawns on that block because that's how you hustled. You know, you could do that. We had a lot of trees. The city had street cleaners. You know, you couldn't park your car on the street that day because they had these big, humongous street cleaning. They washed the street. We were very organized. And that school was very much the heart of that community. And it hurts. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's like that's a part of my life. I become very distraught. This was a working class neighborhood with good people sitting on the porches.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Carl Taylor. sociology professor here at MSU.
Thank you for having me.
For WKAR News, I'm Reginald Hardwick.
Current State on WKAR. We take you back now to that scene. On July 23, 1967, tensions in Detroit boiled over into what came to be known as the Detroit Riots. By the time the unrest ended several days later, 43 people were dead, more than 1,000 injured, and 2,000 buildings were destroyed. The Detroit Tigers were hosting the New York Yankees on that day.
The count on Horton is now 2 balls and 2 strikes. Here's the step by Segui, the pitch. Swung on, the drive for that. That'll be the ball game. It's over the head of Gosman. Willie Horton has a single, and the ball game is over.
One young African-American Tigers star who had grown up in Detroit tried to bring calm to the chaos at the intersection of 12th and Claremont, the epicenter of the riot, while still in his uniform. Detroit Tiger legend Willie Horton tells his story of July 23, 1967.
I remember we had a doubleheader with the Yankees, and matter of fact, I think I hit a home run the first game. And the second game, they called us off and said we all go home for our safety. But before that, you could see this smoke. I didn't know. It was just dark. And you could look to the right field area back down, and that was 12th Street back in that area. And then the guy said we got to go. A riot broke out, and they wanted us to go on for our sick. And they let us know when we resumed playing, which we did. We had to go to Baltimore that weekend. When I went in the clubhouse, I don't know, at the time, I didn't know why I did, but, you know, some things you have no control over. I didn't think about taking a shower. I didn't think about anything. All I said, well, I put my street belt, clothes in my duffel bag, and I got in my car, and I drove to the riot and tried to bring peace. And, you know, I look back over that, and I think about the people's concern of Willie getting hurt. And that gave me life that I got to get involved beyond the field. They said, go home for you, but I'm trying to bring peace, and I was trying to, in my word, I don't know the words, but the word I said to them, but I try to tell them, you know, it's a reason as a ride. It's no reason to take and burn down your stores, your benzin, and loot in your stores, and et cetera. You're getting away from the purpose of it. But the ride, to me, is it started inflating like one of, about a year before that, and it just led up to that one particular night. And then as I look back, I think my involvement in the riot started back my involvement in experience of segregation when I left home as a kid in Lakeland, Florida, when I got off the bus and I had to walk downtown Lakeland to Tiger Town. To me, I thought they were playing a joke on me. I thought you heard about when you leave home, you have rookie jokes, and they play on it. I said, well, get my duffel bag, and I walk. But when I got out there as a kid, I can't think of his name, that we played city ball together, and a white kid, and we've been knowing each other all this time, and they wouldn't let us room together. And I never forget it. I had to go to the third dorm, and that's where on the last floor they had all the Spanish and black guys on the third floor. And then you didn't pay that much attention to it, because when you're around kids, you just do things. You just think that the place is full. But then when me and Mickey Stanley one day, we went to see the big league team play, and the guy Usher told me I had to go in right field and set and Stanley. And so we decided we walked back to the ballpark. We didn't stay. We went walked back to Tiger Town, and it's something I look at that now, how far it is, but when you're a kid, you just walk. But then the next year I was in the big league, I went to that same Usher, and I asked him, now, what position you want me to play? So, you know, I just took things like that, made me a better person where I got involved, and from that incident in Lakeland, and I got involved down there and helped pick at the Polk Theater and getting involved with other civil rights movement, that it helped me got ready for the future and the ride. So, but if I'm going to never have that walk, I never met Bob Hope. I remember Ernie Harwell taking me home, and he lived in Clearwater, Florida, feeding me, and explain it to me about the future, him and George Kell. I didn't understand what he was talking about. I just wanted to play baseball. And then I was very fortunate I got introduced to Hank Greenberg, what he had to go through as a Jew. And so I'm saying I was blessed during the time that the good Lord put me in people's hand, got me ready for things that I'm doing and continue doing today beyond the field.
Are they still getting down where we to go and dance? Will our ball club win the pennant? Do you think they have a chance?
And Detroit Tiger great Willie Horton in a conversation he had earlier this week with WKAR Scott Pohl. This coming week, WKAR News looks back on Detroit in the summer of 1967 in a week-long series.
What's been shaking up and down the line? I know I'm slightly behind the time.